So the sections relevant to settlement credits, and I'll be talking about 012 and 013 here in a little bit greater detail, but it's 33012. That provision governs the calculation of a claimant's maximum recovery. 33013, that provision governs the calculation of a defendant's maximum liability. And then 33.001, which defines key terms that are used in those two provisions, like claimant, defendant, liable defendant, settling person, and percentage of responsibility. And we're going to talk in some greater detail about that provision's definition of a claimant, how the Supreme Court has addressed it, and how it has morphed over time. So first, I'll talk about the standard of review. The Supreme Court in the Skyview case, which was just decided in 2018, explained that, of course, it was under the one satisfaction rule, but I think this would apply to cases governed by Chapter 33 as well, that whether the defendant is entitled to credit one or more settlements is reviewed on appeal de novo. The same de novo standard is, of course, going to apply to questions of statutory construction, like how to construe certain provisions of Chapter 33, because questions of statutory construction are questions of law. One issue that the Supreme Court did not address, but other courts have addressed and applied an abuse of discretion standard, or just generally the more deferential standard applied to a trial court's resolution of disputed fact issues, are questions that involve the presentation of potentially conflicting evidence. For example, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but when you're trying to prove that a claimant's allocation of settlement proceeds is a sham. So who has the burden of proof? Well, the burden is first on the non-settling defendant to prove the existence and the amount of the settlement by either putting the settlement agreement in the record or putting on the record some other evidence of the settlement amount. And so we'll talk about the Virlar case for another reason here in a minute, a recent Fourth Court opinion. But in that case, the non-settling defendant mentioned the amount of the settlement credit. It was not disputed by the claimant. And the Fourth Court held that because that statement was on the record and it went undisputed, that that was enough to meet the burden. The burden is then next on the claimant to show that all or part of the settlement should not be credited. This can come into play, for example, when you have a settlement agreement that might allocate between compensatory damages and exemplary damages, because the exemplary damages are not going to be considered part of the credit. If that allocation is made in a settlement agreement, the burden is then shifts again to the non-settling defendant to prove that that allocation is a sham. If the non-settling defendant is able to produce evidence of a sham, there is a presumption that arises that the entire settlement amount should be credited, and then the burden is again on the claimant to overcome that presumption. So in determining how to apply the settlement credit and ultimately how to determine the amount that will be awarded to a plaintiff or a claimant against a defendant in the judgment, it's important to understand the interplay between two particular sections in Chapter 33. And those are sections 33.012, which again governs the plaintiff's maximum recovery. It's entitled amount of recovery. And 33.013, which determines and instructs how to calculate the defendant's liability. So 33.012, how you calculate the plaintiff's maximum recovery is you first take the amount of damages awarded to the claimant by the jury. From that, you then subtract the percentage of responsibility assigned to the plaintiff by the jury, if any. And then that is then followed by a deduction of the amount of any settlement credit. So once you do that, you get a figure, and that figure is the plaintiff's maximum recovery. Then you turn your attention to section 33.013, and you calculate the defendant's amount of liability. And you do that by first taking the amount of damages awarded by the jury and multiplying it by the defendant's percentage of responsibility. So, for example, if the jury awards $1 million in damages, compensatory damages, the defendant is assigned 20% responsibility. The defendant will be responsible its amount of liability will be $200,000. Now, this, of course, changes if the defendant is jointly and severally liable. That is, if the defendant is assigned more than 50% responsibility, or if the defendant is found guilty of some penal code violation. In that circumstance, then the defendant's maximum liability will be the entire verdict.